As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, we have a Nice up in Ligue 1, Berlin hitting a wall, Roma Monza jeers and tears, Ajax relegation fears, and another Barca teenage prodigy appears. There's an Andy Carroll sighting, plus a special look ahead to Champions League Round 3. All that and more in this Totally Football Show. Monday the 23rd of October. It's a special early Euro show for us today because Champions League looms large in the diaries of James Horncastle.
Hello.
Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hola.
And Raphael Honigstein.
Hi.
Hi. Nice to have us all together in the same studio.
It's so nice.
So nice.
I've missed you.
Have you missed us, Jules? Yeah. Well, you've been busy though, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
France have qualified for the Euros in the
meantime. Get in, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to win
Spain
it again.
Also.
As usual.
Italy, not so much.
Not so much.
Not
so
they
much.
Might not at all.
Hey, yeah. You know.
Just saying.
And Germany, you're going to be there anyway, aren't you, Jerome? How the preparations going?
Confirmed.
Confirmed.
Here we go.
Breaking news.
Official and confirmed. Papers right. Have been signed.
Paperwork yeah. Signed.
Very, very nice. Excellent. But you had a good international break, Raf?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. I went Austria, to might qualify Austria. Too. Austria
oh, yeah. Did you go and hang out with Ralph?
I did, but the game I went to against Belgium, they lost. They qualified a few days later away to Azerbaijan.
He was well?
Very well. Mm. Very
Ralph Cifaretto.
Oh.
What? I don't get it.
You just said, because James said Ralph, people might not automatically assume that it'd be Ralph Raniak. It could be Ralph from The Simpsons, Ralphie from The Sopranos.
I think the fact that Raph mentioned Austria gave a strong
Ralph
indication
Nader.
Of which.
Great Lunatic,
Ralph Mouth. Anyway, have a moment of the weekend, why don't you? Alvaro.
My moment of the weekend.
Yes.
Well, obviously, the name is Mark Yu. This is a boy.
Not Mark Hughes.
No.
Also
no.
A Barcelona player.
Also a Barcelona player. Yeah, true. Look, actually, that's true. But yeah, this boy, he scored for Barcelona, I think, at 23 seconds after he came onto the pitch. It was his debut. Barcelona was drawing 0-0 with Athletic Club Bilbao. And midway through the second half, he came on and he scored the goal, just beating Unai Simón.
Buen balón. ¿Te imaginas que marca? Ahí está el golpeo, pero lo ha hecho.
It wasn't easy. He scored a beautiful goal. And yeah, who knows if this is the beginning of a great career at Barcelona for the boy. But, you know, Barcelona brings out plenty of academy products lately. They don't have a single penny. Mm. And some of them are very good. And Mark Yu could be one of them.
Extraordinary, isn't it? Another one rolls off the line. Only his second touch as a Barcelona first team player.
Yeah, and I think that the final picture of him just being hugged by Lamine Yamal and Fermin, it's one of these pictures that La Masia should be proud of, the Barcelona Academy. Probably you have to print that picture and put it somewhere in La Masia too, all together with the picture of, I don't know, obviously this is a totally different thing, but in 2011, Messi, Iniesta and Xavi were first, second and third in the Ballon d'Or ceremony. And this is a picture that La Masia is very proud of. Well, yesterday, La Masia has another picture to be proud of. Young players just winning a game against Athletic de Bilbao.
Yeah, it was a good goal as well, no? Because it looked like maybe he should have squared it. And I think it was Torres in the middle probably thought that too.
Yeah, but I think that Unai Simón opened up the angle a little bit for him, and then he went for it. And I think that the best thing about it is that probably he didn't think too much. He just did it. Mm. And it happened, and Barcelona won.
They certainly did. Mm. Very exciting at the top of La Liga. Pretty exciting at the top of the Bundesliga as well. Hey, Raf.
Hey, James.
What was your moment of the weekend?
Well, James, I don't have a moment of the week.
Okay.
I have a game, though.
Ah.
And it's in Bundesliga 2.
Oh, good.
You might remember the story. Düsseldorf decided to open up their stadium and let everyone in for free.
Hmm.
Paid for by sponsors. And it's going to be four games. This was the first one. Against Kaiserslautern, I think third against six, so proper big game. Unfortunately, they were 3-0 down after 32 minutes.
No.
And things were very flat. But they rallied back to win 4-3.
Wow.
And the stadium exploded.
It's worth the price of the ticket.
Incredible.
Wandspieler Vermey, und jetzt schießt, rufen sie an, und er schießt, und er trifft, und Tor! 4-3, Daniel Thune tickt aus da unten in seiner Jogginghose.
I mean, you couldn't have scripted it. It was just amazing, an amazing occasion.
Right. No, you literally could script it, but it's better that it happened in real life.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing they would script in Hollywood.
They
This isn't
if
sport.
They were working.
Like goal.
This is everything.
Goal.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Magnificent. Very happy for them. Very happy for them. What was the reason for Düsseldorf free ticket initiative?
They wanted to try this out because they've been trying to fill the stadium. And it's not always full. And they thought, okay, let's see if we can get sponsors to pay the difference and see if we can make this a thing. And there's a view of, or an ambition to make this actually a full-time or regular occasion to do all home games for free down the line, if they can make it work.
Do they make so much of concessions that they kind of come out on top anyway?
Well, I guess they've done the numbers and thought, you know, if we get the extra 30,000,
right,
we can make it up on merchandise, etc., as long as our sponsors pay the difference. But it was a huge success. And they have a nice little motto. It's called Fortuna Düsseldorf for everyone, because you don't have to pay to get
it. It doesn't cost a fortuna as well. Yeah. That's so nice. So, and
I think you did that joke last season when we...
I had a tuna gag good. As
yes,
well.
Yes, I'm sure good. I remember that. Yeah.
It's still good.
Work. It's still great.
No, it's still very good.
So, but one other serious point. Is there any suggestion that had they had the usual ragtag half-filled stadium, they wouldn't have been able to rally quite so effectively?
I think you are deeply into the realms of hypotheticals here, James.
But still...
It's possible. It's possible that they wouldn't have.
All right.
Wouldn't have come back.
And you can't put a price on that.
You can't put a price on that.
No.
There's a slight caveat to this wonderful story. Ragnar Aki was hit by a Coca-Cola bottle, and there is a small chance that Kaiserslautern, because it was a Kaiserslautern player, that they might lodge a protest.
Ooh.
But he was able to carry on, so the chances of that.
He showed real bottle.
Again, top word. Yeah. James, how about your moment of the weekend?
It's probably former Milan players getting emotional, James. And I'm not just talking about Sandro Tonali as he prepares for his ban, but Stephen Elshawari, who had been falsely accused by the paparazzo making all of these allegations about players and betting. Elshawari's legal team have threatened to take action against this guy, Fabrizio Corona. And he ended up scoring the winning goal for Roma against Monza. It was their fourth straight win in all competitions. It was a 89th minute winner as well. So he was in tears afterwards, saying it was like a liberation after all these all this fake news about him. And then there was Manuel Locatelli, who made his name coming through the ranks at AC Milan.
Right.
He scored a goal, famously, James, on October 22nd, 7 years ago.
Right.
And
a goal for who Milan? Against who?
He scored for AC Milan against Juventus. It was a screamer from outside the box. Mm-hmm. We probably spoke about it on this podcast as Locatelli being the next big thing in Italian football.
Right.
Those expectations caused him problems. Milan sold him to Sassuolo, where he resurrected his career under Roberto Di Zerbi. He then joined Juventus, the club that he grew up supporting as a child in Como.
7 years to the day from that screamer in the exact same fixture. Locatelli dalla distanza, tiro, deviazione,
rete, ha segnato la Juventus. He scored another screamer, albeit with a deflection.
Come on.
A deflection.
Not a screamer at all.
Past Milan's third-choice goalkeeper, who wasn't Olivier Giroud. And it was the only goal of the game. And he also broke down in tears afterwards.
So much to take out of both those stories, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll have to wait because Jules is standing by with his moment of the weekend. Does it involve, Jules, does it involve Andy Carroll?
That was going to be. But if you wanted to mention I've got another one if you want. I've got...
I mean, it's become the fashion to... Fill your boots. Have as many as you like.
So I will go with Andy Carroll. Saturday afternoon, Amiens play away at Annecy. So Andy Carroll, if you don't know, that Andy Carroll. In the French second division now, in Amiens. God knows how he ended up there, but he's there. Scored a lovely, lovely lob from, 35 yards it was against Annecy. For only second goal of the season, he only had 3 starts and I think 6 or 7 appearances in total. But that was lovely, lovely, lovely goal from his left foot.
Beautiful. I bet your other one was a goal from even further up, from 58.2 metres.
Exactly, James. You read my mind.
Was it not the fourth furthest from goal scoring strike since records began?
Exactly. So remember Memphis Depay at the time where we were still doing the European football show on BT Sport scored... An amazing one as well. We've had Nabil Fekir scoring 1-2 from the halfway line. This one was just inside his box. I think the longest is 67 meters or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. The longest in France?
In France.
France, okay.
And Lamine Kamara.
Just inside his half?
Just inside his half, for Metz against Monaco on Sunday. And he said that he plays the crossbar challenge game at training all the time from the halfway line. And he's quite accurate with it. This is different. But he said that Philippe Cohn, the Monaco goalkeeper, is always very advanced. And that's the way Adi Hütter wants him to play anyway. So that he thought, if I've got the chance, I will try it. And after 4 minutes, not only he tried it, but it's an incredible finish.
Magnificent. We'll hear how that game finished very, very shortly. But we're going to begin with a round of Champions League fixtures.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
All right, it's match day 3 in the Champions League. Tuesday, you've got Bayern travelling to Galatasaray, who haven't lost a game this season. They are 23 games unbeaten. Man United, meanwhile, will be looking for their first points of this campaign in Europe. They're at home to Copenhagen. Sevilla, who've got a brand new manager, will be hosting Arsenal, PSV against Lens in the same group. Other highlights include on Wednesday, Man City are at Young Boys with the plastic pitch, Jules, you remember?
That's right.
RB Leipzig hosting Savinus Fezda. And as ever, Group F looking, effing interesting, really. You've got Newcastle, Dortmund, and PSG Milan. Woof.
Woof.
Newcastle, Dortmund, Rafa. What are they saying about that in Germany?
Well, they're saying that Dortmund, stealthily, are the best team in Europe at the moment.
I'm sorry,
did you notice?
No.
Points per game in 2023, they've won more than anyone.
In Europe?
Better than Atletico.
In top 5.
That's incredible.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. But when they went to PSG, they weren't the best team in the Park of France, were they?
No, they're not.
At the end of last season in the Bundesliga, they were not the best.
The Champions League points are not included in this. This is league.
Right.
But I think it's still a very interesting stat because it shows you that despite Dortmund not playing very well and, of course, drawing that fateful game against Mainz at the end of the last season, not really looking that hot in the Champions League either, they found consistency in terms of results. And they won again on Friday against Werder Bremen, the kind of game that perhaps the beginning of the season they would have drawn, but they found a way through. Julian Brandt with a great goal. He's been really superb in this last couple of months. And they found good balance. They are not that exciting, but they are much more solid than they have been in the past. And in a way, Newcastle are quite similar. You know, Newcastle are not a very expensive team, but they're hard to break down. So I think this could be a very interesting game, perhaps not very high scoring. But I see Dortmund with a chance.
Will they play four up top? against Newcastle?
I was referencing
PSG was doing that.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. 4-2-4. Yeah.
Well, the 4-2-4. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. I don't think so, James. Okay.
Right.
We don't have a maverick Spanish coach. Edin Terzic is quite pragmatic.
Give him some time.
Yeah.
Rafi. So my conclusion from your analysis here is that Jude Bellingham was holding Dortmund back.
Absolutely.
That's exactly how it's being read in Germany,
okay.
Yes.
I look forward to your column.
they miss him, of course. They miss him a lot in midfield. But Terzic has changed the system, and maybe it's also because he's no longer there. They played 4-3-3 last year, and Bellingham was like a number 10, a number 8, a number 6 all at the same time. Now it's a more static setup, if you will, 4-2-3-1 with Marco Reus back in. He has to play in a number 10 because he can't run up and down on the sides anymore. So Dortmund are a little bit slower, a little bit more deliberate. But it works at the moment because it gives them good stability, good protection for the back four.
Okay, and Julian Brandt's having a terrific time. He has created, here's a stat, more chances than any player in the Champions League so far this season. How many of those have resulted in goals? None. None goals so far.
It's not his fault, though.
No, okay.
None goals.
To beat Newcastle, especially at St. James's Park in the Champions League, you need a lot of character.
I think
there was Michael Cox here in this podcast flagging that a tackle from Anthony Gordon was like the catalyzer for St. James's Park to erupt even more and end up just destroying PSG. Yeah, more or less that was the thing. No, but...
Do I have to listen to this?
No.
What was the Anthony Gordon tackle with what? The catalyst for what you said?
They are celebrating even tackles over there. The atmosphere is crazy.
Is that the only stadium where they celebrate a tackle?
Well, one of the few. And
really?
Come on. I'm going to say more, just to finish with my argumentation. I would say that the way they have manufactured the squad in Newcastle has been exactly looking for players who have this personality and this kind of aggression.
Yeah.
Because if you check who scored the goals against Crystal Palace on Saturday, Longstaff, Murphy, Wilson, and the other one was Anthony Gordon, none of them that are state club players. They are not big stars. They went for this kind of players that they are full at it, they go for it, and they have created this culture of fighting a lot and putting a lot of aggressiveness in the game. It's very special what they have done.
Well, no, I was just going to say, they like players who play at full tilt, possibly literally, in Sandro Tonali's case. I don't know if that's one side
allegedly,
he went to
or
not. But what is the Sandro Tonali situation? Because the Italian authorities are being extremely expeditious with their bans. We should have a verdict within the next few days now on him.
Or within the next few hours, because Tonali's legal team have been in Rome, or they've been in conversation with public prosecutors for the Italian Football Federation about his plea bargain. It is expected to be a longer ban than Nicola Fagioli's. We will have to see. There is some desire for it to come into effect as quickly as possible, so that he can obviously return as soon as possible.
Right. Suggestions are they're looking for a year, his lawyers are looking for 10 months, but it's that kind of size, the likely suspension.
Yeah, and as with Fagioli's ban, Fagioli was banned for 12 months, but only 7 is stopping him from playing football. The rest is partly the therapy that he's to undergo for his gambling addiction. And also he has to do quote-unquote community service, which is a series of speaking engagements to amateur football clubs, federal training centres for young up-and-coming players, and also sort of addiction charities as well. So I think that would be parceled in to whatever ban. But at the moment, nothing official that we can report. Tonali was in Durham the weekend. Obviously, he played, came on for the last 20 minutes of that game against Palace, but he was at Adventureland.
Okay. What's Adventureland in Durham?
He's clearly very worried. It's a theme park, isn't it?
I think it's a theme park, yeah.
What kind of thing do they have?
Adventure, James. It's a land of adventure, but it's a little bit like, I imagine, Flamingo Land in Yorkshire.
Oh. What is Flamingo Land?
You never heard of Flamingo Land?
No. Only Yorkshire people must have.
Do you mean Adventure Valley?
I do not know.
I think you mean Adventure Valley.
It's got six huge play zones. It's got Farmyard Fun. They've also they boast the world's fastest tortoise. So there's that. While we're on the subject of amazing statistics,
really fast. Yeah. I mean, you know,
Sandro
I mean,
Tonali.
Sign me up.
It's a long way from London.
Has played more minutes in the Champions League since the start last season than any other outfield player. That's clearly about to change. But no player since the start last season has played more minutes in the Champions League outfield player than him.
I mean, obviously, he played pretty much every minute to the semi-final. Yeah. So there's no Man City players who would have played more than him. Yeah. But yeah, he can now watch it. You can watch the gold show now.
Voila. So, there you go. So there's that. Excellent. Does anybody think Dortmund are going to do better at Newcastle than PSG did?
It's not hard to do better than PSG did.
Yeah, they're the best team in Europe, James. So, yeah, of course.
But I think that in that group in particular, the home sides are going to win most of the games. There hasn't been an away win in that group yet.
Right. We're all doing predictions for our TV enterprise. Who's got a Dortmund away win here?
I haven't actually done my Wednesday
predictions. What are you going to put down, Raf?
I think I'm going to put down a 1-1 draw.
Are you? Nice. Jules, what are you going to put down?
I went for 2-1 Newcastle.
Okay.
Because of the Anthony Gordon tackles. I'm only kidding, Alvaro, I'm kidding.
James?
Yeah, I will go for a Newcastle win. I haven't done my predictions yet, but I haven't really been impressed by Dortmund in the Champions League so far this season, even against Milan at Dortmund. So an open game, one that Milan felt that they should have perhaps won, but let's see.
What are you going to put for PSG Milan, which is happening at the same time on Wednesday?
Ooh, it's an awkward one for Milan because they should have 6 points from this group. They only have 2. There's a lot of regret from not taking their chances against Newcastle and against Dortmund. PSG are seen as the team that has the most talent in this group, regardless of, you know, being a group of death, regardless of what we've been talking about with Luis Enrique. But for Milan to have lost against Juventus at the weekend, to have played for around about an hour with 10 men, and to have Napoli coming up at the weekend as well, all of a sudden, I wouldn't say there's pressure on Stefano Pioli because they'd won 7 out of 8 games going into, in the league at least, going into the weekend's game. But it feels like this is a really tough part of the season, and it will only get tougher, I would imagine. Paris, Jules has obviously seen PSG more than I have.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating one. Even at 11 against 11, I was not really impressed by Milan against Juve on Sunday night, to be fair. But I think Leao can hurt any team, really. I don't know who would play midfield either. But I think PSG, even with that 4-2-4, which I expect it is going to be again the 4-2-4 for Luis Enrique at the Parc des Princes, will go for it. I think there will be a lot of space to run in behind. For Leao, for example, for Giroud, not so much. But maybe Okafor could do a really good job at some point in that game to beat that PSG back 3/back 4. So it should be good. I still think PSG, because they're home, have to be a slight favourite in that game. But you can call it, I think you can predict a draw. I think that would be fair too. But PSG have to win after what happened in Newcastle, really.
I also think since their return to the Champions League a couple of years ago, this group of Milan players and Pioli, they reached the semi-final of the Champions League last year, but they've yet to have what I would say like is a statement away performance.
Right.
Aside from beating Atletico, awful Atletico, 1-0 with that Junior Macias header in a group stage where they went out of the group, they haven't really delivered something which I think has made everyone stand up and take notice.
And in the league as well, the big fixtures this season, the derby, that humiliation of 5-1 at the hands of Inter, and now this defeat at the weekend.
But it's not that they were still perhaps waiting for an away statement, but the performance last year against Tottenham at Tottenham Ground was incredible. The way they defended until the end, that was not a victory, but you could pretty much vote that as a victory because it was amazing.
They defended really well. They did defend really well, but that came at a time when they were playing poorly in the league. They'd had 5 put past them by Sassuolo. They changed system, played 3 at the back, and it was a Tottenham team that was going through the motions with Conte on his way out. And it was a Milan team that I felt that did not play to the potential that we saw when they won the league, that kind of high-pressing, free-flowing football. It was kind of quite gritty, backs against the wall. So what I'm talking about is
for Milan to show their best version of themselves in the Champions League away from home. We've not seen that yet, at least in terms of an attacking performance.
Even though they lost, I thought Mirante was good. At 40.
Yeah, particularly at the end.
Yeah.
The shirt sales for Mirante this morning must be going through the roof. Whether they match Giroud's goalkeeper shirt, we don't know. But the thing is, Milan will have Mike Maignan back.
He was suspended.
Teo Hernandez will be back. So, yeah, those are two really big players for Milan. But I agree with Jules. I thought Milan were very stale and ineffective, particularly in midfield, against Juventus. And that's because Juventus do what teams don't really do anymore, which is just say, we're going to play in a mid to low block. We're going to block all the passing lanes. You're not going to get past us. And then we're just going to hoof it long to our striker, Moise Kean. It's not what you see from big clubs these days. But Milan struggled to break through that team, which was teams that play that way is why Milan recruited the way that they did in the summer, with signing players like Okafor, Chukwueze, Pulisic, guys who can go past players in 1v1s, midfield players who are more technical, more skillful. Thought they missed Loftus-Cheek on Sunday. They'll miss him again against PSG. So we'll see.
We'll see. Only Man City and Real Madrid have had more shots than Milan in the Champions League this season. But of course, the Rossoneri yet to find the net once. Celtic are taking on Atletico Madrid. That's on Wednesday as well. Atletico Madrid, ooh, a 3-0 win against Celta in the build-up to this, with a hat-trick from Antoine Griezmann.
Yeah,
possibly him and Bellingham are the best players in La Liga right now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, performance-wise, I mean, and number-wise as well. He was very good, and Atletico showed, again, the solidity that they've been showing in 2023. And Rafa mentioned that the Dortmund is, point-wise, the best team in 2023, I think. Well, Atletico must be somewhere near there, because they have been amazing, really. And with the exception of a defeat this season, I think that they have had only one. The rest of the games, we have Valencia against 3-0. The rest of the games, they have done very well.
Okay, well, that one's at Parkhead on Wednesday. In a second or two, we'll have a look at a couple of games on Tuesday and then get on to your weekend league action.
Football is bigger and more complicated than ever before. Just ask VAR.
Check complete. It's fine. Perfect. Yeah.
So the Daily Football Briefing is here to help, whether it's the World Cup.
It's a kind of face-saving, everyone's happy, no one's a loser.
Lionel Messi.
As they say, he completed football.
Or Manchester United.
I mean, the performances all season have been questionable.
That are making you quizzical. The Daily Football Briefing has all the answers you need for every football story that matters, and it does exactly what the name suggests. It's daily, it's brief, and it's all about football. The Daily Football Briefing from The Athletic, available wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Those Tuesday games, going to pick out a couple here, but if there's any others you'd like to discuss, feel free. Man United taking on Copenhagen, United looking for their first points of this campaign. It's the first time they've lost their opening two matches in a European Cup campaign ever. But surely at home to Copenhagen, it's going to go their way. Or, having seen brave Copenhagen taking a two-goal lead away in Istanbul, taking the lead against Bayern Munich, do we feel that the Danes have another surprise in store?
I mean, how much of a surprise would it be to get a result at Man United these days? But it was a strange performance from them, because they, for a long time, looked very much second best, but then came back really, really strongly and caused lots of problems for Bayern. I think away from home, they'd be less of a force, though. Mm.
That 2-0 lead, though, in Istanbul, which eventually Galatasaray brought back to 2-2. I think Copenhagen had gone down to 10 men, had they not?
Yes. I think United will find a way of winning this game.
Okay. All right.
And it's the Hoyland derby, of course, because he's young.
Hoyland versus Hoyland.
The Hoyland twins.
Younger brother, Oscar, especially because the other twin hasn't really made it to the... his other brother hasn't made it to the first team properly. But Oscar is regularly on the bench. So, yeah, it'd be a special game, I guess, for the Hoyland family. Like for the Hernandez family, we didn't mention briefly on the PSG Milan, but Lucas against Theo.
Of course, quite rare that
brothers, you know, either play with each other for a national team. And we've talked a lot about Sir Bobby Charlton and his brother, of course, this week in England, but also against each other in a Champions League match. But we'll have two this match day.
Very nice. Very nice. Sevilla are hosting Arsenal, of course, reeling from their defeat last time out away to Lens. What kind of opposition will Sevilla now offer, given that they are now under the managerial auspices of Diego Alonso?
Yeah, Diego Alonso didn't do too well with Uruguay in the World Cup.
No.
Not at all. But he actually qualified for Uruguay for the World Cup when it looked like they weren't going to, because they lost four games in a row with Tavares, and the last one, 3-0 against Bolivia and Hernando Siles' ground. And they appointed Diego Alonso. He won four games straight. He made a couple of interesting decisions. He dropped Muslera and he gave a start to Roset. So he's a manager that also make big decisions. And here at Sevilla, in his first game, I think the most important thing he has done, he has broken that double pivot holding midfield of Fernando and Rakitic, which is clearly not up to the pace of La Liga, let alone the Champions League. And he has populated the midfielder with, you know, fresher legs like Soumaré, the former Leicester City player, and Debril Show, all together with Rakitic, and it seems to work a little bit more.
Well, this weekend...
against Real Madrid.
Yeah, against league-leading Real Madrid. They look good, no?
Yeah, no, they were good. They were competitive. Of course, there are still some veterans that are undroppable, like Sergio Ramos or Jesus Navas, because they have been playing really well. Same for Sevilla, that Gudelich is probably out. And since Sevilla lost Diego Carlos and Jules Koundé, they haven't had the centre-back duo that played long in time just to consolidate themselves together. And it looked like Ramos and Gudelich could be the centre-back partnership, but Ramos will play with someone else, obviously. But I think Sevilla has improved slightly, and let's not underestimate the atmosphere of Sánchez-Pizjuán in a European night. Remember what happened to Juve or to Manchester United or even to Liverpool a few years ago when they were winning 3-0 by the halftime and they ended up drawing 3-3. So, you know, I think that Arsenal will have phases when they will dominate a lot, maybe at the beginning because they tend to storm onto the pitch, especially in the Champions League, but Sevilla will have their moments too.
Okay.
Alvaro, is the Ramon Sánchez-Pizjuán, as you've described it, is that one of those stadiums where a Sergio Ramos tackle can be the catalyst?
100%.
Well, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, one tackle equates a goal over there. Right. Yeah.
The atmosphere, in a slightly negative sense, this weekend for the clash with Real Madrid, where there were images of a couple, certainly at least a couple of Sevilla fans making essentially monkey chants against Vini Jr. And very swift response from the Spanish authorities.
Yeah, because Vinicius also said that he had received in his social media the video of a child doing the monkey gesture.
Looks like
as well.
A pretty young gesture.
It was a terrible thing. Again, it happened in Valencia back in April or in May. It happened at Sevilla. The good thing is that, as you said, Sevilla tackled that quickly. They sent a statement. They have identified the person, and that person will no longer be a Sevilla member. So let's see if this has some more ramifications or not. But yeah, again, that happened with Vinicius as the subject of some really nasty racism.
No goal or assist for Jude Bellingham for once.
Yeah, even though he scored, and
useless player.
Yeah, really
average.
Bad. I mean, he has to go. It's a pleasure to do this podcast because I don't have to talk about the referees and all that. I will be talking in a Spanish radio show, basically. Because
the
whole narrative has been around the referee and how bad he did. Maybe Jules, that I know he follows all this. He knows a little bit. But everything has been about the referee in the Sevilla-Real Madrid game. And I don't think that the referee was so outrageous. He was bad, only bad. He cancelled a goal from Fede Valverde and another one from Bellingham, but the one from Fede Valverde was well cancelled, and the one from Bellingham scored 11 seconds after the referee had stopped the game for a non-existing fault on Lucas Ocampos.
This business of the Spanish radio discussing the refereeing and very little else, is this something that you see on the rise in other countries as well? Certainly in this country, it feels like we spend a lot more of kind of analysis time discussing refereeing than...
Yeah, but the thing is that in Spain, everything is...
Politicized?
No. Yeah, exactly. It's investigated and checked through the lens of Madrid versus Barcelona,
right.
Barcelona versus Madrid, right. even in a political sense.
And it's not especially like one of those countries.
Well. And especially before el Clásico. The discussion is impossible. The game analysis sometimes is non-existent because everything is about the referees.
Right.
It's very tiring. And you will see how this week... Because it's going to happen.
Right.
Ahead of El Clásico, Real Madrid TV is going to make a big preview of the referee who's going to judge in El Clásico, just basically flagging the mistakes he did in the past against Real Madrid.
Before the Sevilla game, pre-match, they showed all the mistakes that he made against Real Madrid in his career.
Wow.
There's no other club, no other country where you see that.
And the music, when they do this kind of features, is like a war
sinister.
Movie. Sinister.
Right.
You know, it's very, very, very...
I think that's so unfair. I mean, it's not like Barcelona have got in any way a suspicion of having... leaned on and made financial payments to referees.
I know, and we have discussed that in a very, nice way here. Barcelona, I think that they deserve all the scrutiny they are getting because they did that, but that doesn't mean that Real Madrid has to do this, coercive videos towards the referees.
Absolutely. Yeah. They got Braga midweek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should win it.
Okay, good. Excellent. Any other Champions League stuff you're particularly excited by? Of course, all the games will be featured on the popular TV show, The Gold Show. You mentioned, Alvaro, that the Clásico is coming up next week. And the build-up has seen Real, as we mentioned, drawing at Sevilla. Barcelona, meanwhile, with that 1-0 win against Athletic Bilbao. They are just 1 point apart now ahead of that huge game next weekend. But between them, and indeed level with Real Madrid on points, the big story are Girona again... promoted just the season before last. They came from 2-0 down this weekend against Almeria and won 5-2. You know, incredible.
It was unbelievable. Again, Almeria is reminds me of Levante 2 years ago when they got relegated, conceding many and scoring many as well. Almeria has conceded 29 already. It's mental. It's mental. And Girona, they've got half the points they got at the end of last season. So 25... Last season they ended up with 49, I believe. Mm. So it's quite a good booty for them, considering you know that they don't invest so much money. But it's about the style. Obviously, playing so well and being third or second or top in La Liga means that some Girona players are interesting for the national sides too. The other day, Jan Couto played the game for Brazil. You know, a Girona player playing for Brazil is quite a thing. Dobik, the Ukrainian, has played fantastically. Savinho is one of the interesting players that we have to follow. A young Brazilian, very skillful too. And the team plays with a lot of confidence on what they are doing. This is what makes the difference. It's not only that they come onto the pitch just to entertain themselves, because this is not like, okay, go out there and pass the ball and score goals. You know, it's not like this. But they know that they've got certain freedoms to do certain things. And... I believe that they are playing in a very calm way because they know that eventually the style and what they are trying to do is going to pay dividends.
Mm.
And, you know, it's working for them really well. And they beat Almeria. Coming back from a 2-0 is not easy for anybody, not even for Real Madrid.
It's a really romantic story, particularly this Brazilian player. I mean, who owns Girona again, Alvaro?
I know.
It's a fairy tale.
All that said, but they could be playing like, Granada in the 60s, you know? They almost have a knife under the sock, those Granada players. And they are playing in a nice way. So I think that it's good for La Liga, James. What can I tell you? It's very good for them.
They could be top next weekend if Real Madrid come unstuck against Barca and they beat Celta Vigo, who are down in the relegation zone, and then boom.
Yeah, and poor Rafa Benitez, by the way, if he loses again.
All right.
Yeah.
Barcelona. Oh, you were tweeting this weekend, 2 years with Xavi. The team gets more and more dull as the games go by, says Alvaro Romeo. He is lucky he gets judged by irrelevant stuff and not by the way his team plays. What's the irrelevant stuff?
Shots fired.
He gets criticised by things he says sometimes that we call it in Spain being too purista, like trying to be too pure about the things you believe in.
Mm.
So, for example, Xavi thinks that sometimes it looks like you can only play in a certain way.
Mm.
The grass always has to be perfectly cut. Things like this, as Xavi is very very picky about, meticulous about. I think that they are making a mockery out of him, especially in Madrid, you know, because Xavi has always been like this. And basically, Xavi, the character, gets criticized for these things. But all these things sometimes overshadow Xavi, the coach. And I think that Xavi, the coach, won La Liga last year, but he spent the whole season saying that the team didn't play the way he wanted.
Right.
Which is the biggest failure a manager can have.
And you think the way that they play is dull and getting duller?
I think that, yeah, because they don't have attacking patterns. And sometimes they rely on passing the ball to the wingers and, you know, let them do something. They did that with Dembélé for 3 months last year until he picked an injury. And then, you know, they won La Liga, keeping many clean sheets. The individual efforts in defense were very good. Mm. But I think that Barcelona, after 2 years with Xavi, was supposed to be a little bit more flashy and play better football. Xavi didn't like what he saw when he arrived in Barcelona. He didn't like the way La Masia was working, the kind of players they were promoting. In all fairness, he's using a lot of La Masia, as Ronald Koeman did, because Barcelona doesn't have the money. Right. In that department, many youngsters are in the first team and they are settled now, and that's fantastic. But, you know, I think that to win important games in Europe, you need to have ways of attacking that Barcelona doesn't have.
A narrow victory this weekend. No Lewandowski in the game. Any word on when he's going to be back?
He may be back for the Clásico, but you know, same thing with Pedri, but I wouldn't put my hand on the fire for
that. They have Shakhtar Donetsk midweek in the Champions League. All righty. Anything else from La Liga, Alvaro?
That's all.
Okay, good. Next up, a word on Serie A.
Hello there, Ayo here. Listen to me on the Athletic Football Podcast, where we go deep on the biggest stories in the game, providing insights and analysis from the very best journalists in the business. You won't get this anywhere else. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places. Just search the Athletic Football Podcast now.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
Milan Juve, we talked about that a little bit. Wasn't the greatest game. So how about the other Milanese side who've gone back on top with Milan dropping points? And that is Inter, who went to Turin and did Torino 3-0. Woof.
Yeah, everyone's doing Torino at the moment. They haven't scored in 4 games. They have a lot of injuries. So they were playing a midfield player at centre-back, Tamez. Pescu's, arguably their best fit centre-back, went off in tears. Suspected cruciate ligament tear. And it was 0-0 at halftime. Yeah, Inter faced what you usually face when you play against Ivan Juric's kind of death metal football, which is a very aggressive team. And if you come from an international break where Pavard has been playing for France, Thuram has had a bit part for his national team as well. You've got guys like Lautaro, who's been over the Atlantic to play for Argentina and Peru and that sort of thing. Inter looked a little bit tired, and then they made some substitutions. Dumfries came on, and they do what they do, which is Thuram scores, magnificent. Lautaro scores, and then they got a penalty, and Calhanoglu put it away. But I mean, this strike partnership is, I think, the best in Europe.
Tula,
because Inter are the only team that have two players who've been involved. Who've got goal involvements in 7 different games this season.
Not even at Dortmund.
Yeah. Best team in Europe.
Best team in Europe.
Best team in Europe. Also, Jan Sommer. I mean,
I was going to say, they're scoring the goals and he's keeping clean sheets. Once again, an Inter goalkeeper keeping a record number of clean sheets.
Yeah, six in his first nine appearances.
It's almost like it's not the goalkeeper that's the important thing.
Yeah. I mean, he has made some big saves, but didn't really have to in this game. But, you know, I think Inter have a higher ceiling than any of the other teams in the league. You know, I think I've already said that I expect them to win the league quite comfortably. They obviously went into the international break having lost to Sassuolo and drawn with Bologna. So they still have that kind of glitchiness in them. But I think they are the best team in Italy.
Okay. It's a shame that Aaron Winter isn't in the team with Jan Sommer.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Nice.
Nice, Raf. Okay. Okay, Inter top again, 1 point ahead of Milan, who are themselves 1 point ahead of Juventus. Fiorentina, though, play Monday, today as we record, and they can move back level with Juventus, 2 points off the top. That's pretty exciting. You went to see Fiorentina's new training ground, James. Was that nice?
Yeah, it was one of the best events I've been to.
Okay, why? What happened?
Well,
good food.
The food was very good, but everybody was there. There was Seferin, the UEFA president, Gravina, Italian Football Federation president. There was a
Hold
big
on,
sort
Seferin
of...
and the Agnellis are friends again?
Or? No, this was Fiorentina.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, the Agnellis
was definitely
not...
Because you were also at the Agnelli event.
I was, yes.
I get confused with all the events you go to.
Yeah. All those freebies.
But they had a big sort of drone show, you know, where they do the drone light show.
Nice. What did the drones depict?
Just Fiorentina stuff. Giglio, you know. And, oh, nice. You know, that sort of thing. There was some nice commemorative old school Fiorentina jerseys.
Oh. Do you have a goodie bag?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not
of course
sure
I've declared
very
of course
ethical.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, Fiorentina, as you mentioned, they play as we record against Empoli, but have been really impressive so far this season, as have Bologna. Are undefeated since the opening day of the season against Milan. They're 8 games unbeaten. Lewis Ferguson keeps scoring goals. Xerxes looks like one of the best strikers in the league. After he first came to Italy on loan with Parma, didn't do well, went back to Bayern, and then he's been brilliant under Thiago Motta at Bologna. So, yeah, they've been great.
I want to talk about the Roman clubs.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned Roma's 1-0 win against Monza with that 89th-minute goal from Stefano Ciarrawy. He bursts into tears, as you mentioned. Jose Mourinho then gets a red card. Again, this is the 6th red card of his time in Rome.
Yeah.
Magnificent. And he gets it, ironically enough, for essentially calling his opposite number, Palladino, a crybaby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He makes these, I mean, this will be a memeable Mourinho moment where he makes this sort of, you're all talk.
Blah, 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 and then crying, the crying face. I mean, he's such a troll, really.
But he had vowed not to get sent off this season. That was his objective. And he wanted to do all the press conferences because he missed the ones he was, you know, when he was suspended for games last year. No. And I think his assistant had also been sent off earlier in this game.
He's going to miss the next game, which is against?
Inter.
That's why I thought he did it on purpose.
Well, he was asked about this afterwards.
Yeah. He had a great post-match press conference because entirely unnecessarily, he brings in Papu Gomez, the other story. So Papu, who was signed by Monza, Roma's opponents, on, I think, was it the last day of the transfer window or outside of the transfer window? Because he was free. So Papu has this 2-year ban for taking a banned substance, which he's appealing. And it had been reported that it was like a cough syrup that his son had taken. And Jose was doing his post-match press conference, was, you know, sort of saying, "Oh, sorry, my voice.
Trolling
my
so
voice
bad.
Is, but I won't be taking any of this sort of cough syrup that Papu's had." So, you know, he just can't resist.
I know.
But yeah, deflected from an otherwise, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say it was a poor performance.
A
yeah. But those 3 wins have come against Frosinone, Cagliari, and Monza. Hmm. So 2 teams that got promoted last year, albeit Frosinone, a bit of a revelation. Cagliari, one of 3 teams that are still winless in Serie A, with Salernitana and Udinese.
Yeah.
And then Monza, who, to be fair, have been pretty good. They were 7th going into this game. But Jose couldn't resist. I mean, it took them until the 89th minute to break down a team that was down to 10 men.
Yeah, fair.
They hit the post a couple of times with Lukaku and Azmoun. And they should have made lighter work of it, is what I'm saying.
A point behind them are the resurgent Lazio, who had a 2-0 win against rather more tosto opponents, Sassuolo.
Yeah, Luis Alberto, masterclass, was magnificent in this game. I think he's just signed a new deal. Immobile was not in the starting 11, but it didn't matter. Castellanos continues to play really well. Obviously, comes from Girona, part of that brilliant system.
That's where he comes from. But he's been the, I mean, dare I say, the revelation of Lazio's.
Well, he was at Girona, but he was formerly a New York City player.
Oh, okay.
Because he's part of the City Group network.
Another romantic story.
Another romantic story. But yeah, I mean, Lazio, since that win in Glasgow against Celtic, have turned a corner. They've also, their fixtures have got easier. They had a really difficult start to the season in which they played
pretty
much.
And they were gifted the two goals, massive defensive mistakes from Sassuolo as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Feyenoord midweek.
Yeah, feisty. This is always feisty whenever a Roman team comes against Feyenoord. I know it's in Holland, but Feyenoord fans famous for breaking the Batcaccia, the statue in the fountain in Piazza di Spagna on the Spanish Steps. So
wrong. All right,
edgy.
Just to quickly mention, mark your card for next weekend, Rafa. Some great City A fixtures coming up. You've got Lazio indeed taking on Fiorentina.
Yeah,
yeah. There's also Inter Roma.
Lukaku's first game with the ultras who've bought 50,000 whistles, as they did when Ronaldo came back and played against them for AC Milan.
Brilliant. And there's also Napoli-Milan. Napoli, who are moving back up now under Rudy Garcia.
Now that De Laurentiis is coaching the team.
Yeah. So, well, fill us in a little bit on the backstory there, because it looked like Garcia was for the chop, but then Antonio Conte said no thanks, he was busy, and so they've doubled down on Garcia.
Yeah, there was like a crisis meeting at the beginning of this international break, and it looked like Garcia was going to get sacked. De Laurentiis like speaks to Conte. Conte's like, yeah, I made a mistake taking over Spurs in season. I should never do that again. I'm not going to do it this time. But, you know, it basically comes out that De Laurentiis wanted Conte. And then De Laurentiis's kind of fudge is, don't worry, Rudy, I do back you. I'm going to be at the training ground more to hold your hand. That sort of thing. In the meantime, Osimhen goes away on international duty. He picks up an injury. He's out for a month. So everyone's like, oh, God, this isn't going well. There's other stuff going on with Osimhen too. Family sort of stuff. Then he was at the training ground and he sort of got very angry with fans asking for autographs. So it didn't look like it was going to be an easy weekend for Garcia, but they played really well against Verona. Cavalazzi got a brace.
Yeah, very nice. Okay, well, that's going to be big next weekend. And just down the road, just to wrap this up, just down the road from Napoli, who's in on the Salernitana bench?
Ha! Super Pippo.
Pippo Inzaghi.
Yeah. Who was it 1-0 down, then 2-1 down.
And yeah, came back twice, yeah, against
came
the
back
Cagliari.
Twice.
Admittedly, Cagliari, but...
At the Arecchi, which is the stadium where he scored his first goals for Italy.
Is that right?
Pippo Inzaghi, yeah, against Spain, I think, back in the day.
Lovely to see him back.
Yeah.
Got a lot of love for Super Pippo. Yeah. February the 18th, by the way, that's when Salernitana play Inter.
Okay.
I looked that one up immediately. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Next up, other stuff.
Is it finished already, Seria? I think we mentioned 14
just one
of
word.
The...
One word.
14 of the 20 clubs. No, because we haven't said anything on Empoli, I think. I'm kidding.
Next up then. Ooh, what's up on Thursday in Europa League? And also, go on, Jules, tell us about Ligue 1 and Rafa about the Bundesliga.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
European League highlights this Thursday include Brighton's clash with Ajax. Both teams, of course, looking for their first win in Europe this season. Ajax looking for a win pretty much anywhere. That's now 8 games without a victory. It's their worst run since the introduction of professional football to the Netherlands in 1954. They have dropped 17th in the Eredivisie. There are 18 teams in the division. This weekend, especially damaging, they took on that rarest of things, a team below them in the table, Utrecht. They went 2 goals down. Yep. They fought back and made it 3-2, but then ended up losing 4-3, which I feel like that's going to be damaging.
They're going to get battered at Brighton.
Who have they got at the weekend after?
PSV?
It is PSV.
So it's big.
Who have not dropped a point in the Eredivisie so far this season.
No. Who travelled to Lens, as we mentioned.
Briefly.
On Tuesday night, which is a big game for them as well. Mm. But Ajax are in absolutely...
They could be bottom of the table.
Terrible. Yeah.
But you've seen it in football, haven't you? Yeah. The team that hasn't dropped a point comes up against crisis club.
Who are you thinking of? You couldn't script it. Anyway, also in the Conference League, another Dutch side, one doing rather better, AZ Alkmaar. They're taking on Aston Villa. They're second in the table. Beat Heerenveen 3-0. That's all I've got on that game. Liverpool are facing Toulouse.
Toulouse, who have been saved by the woodwork 10 times already in the league this season. Only Bournemouth with 11 have had more, like, I don't know how you call it, like saves by the woodwork or something. Yeah. This weekend, Toulouse drew 1-1 with Reims.
Right.
And 3 times Reims hit the same post. Ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
So just warning Liverpool fans that you will hit the woodwork on Thursday night.
Okay. And you can see the highlights with James and myself and Owen Hargreaves.
That's
late
true.
On Thursday.
Yeah.
Catch all of the drama.
TNT Sport.
The Europa and Conference League. Very nice. Okay. Who's up next? Is it Bundesliga or Liga?
Rafa can go first.
Just one word. On the Bundesliga.
Okay, Rafa. It's Bayern Munich's best start to a Bundesliga season in 7 years.
But they're not the best team in
Europe.
They're
third.
And yet, they're only third.
What?
Yeah. And that's
he's
because...
worried. You can see by his face he's worried.
Bayer Leverkusen leading 2-1. They won at Wolfsburg to stay top. Stuttgart in second place. Another win for them. They won 3-0 at Union. Another goal for your man Gracie.
Yeah,
who
but
then...
unfortunately... came off injured.
Hamstring, is it, Raf?
He's going to miss a few weeks.
Right. I mean, they scored another couple of goals after he went off, but it was against...
I know,
Union.
But he had 14 and 8, and that's a shame now to see that interrupted.
Yeah, it is a bit. That's their 6th straight win, Stuttgart. We talked about them a little bit last week and how incredible they are, and they're continuing to be. Meanwhile, that is now 8 defeats in a row for Union Berlin in all competitions. They face Napoli midweek. Is there what's been the impact of this incredible run of defeats?
I mean, everyone's still relatively calm. Was Fischer not under any real pressure? But of course, if you keep on losing, people are going to be unhappy. Robin Gosens probably also missing the game against Napoli, which is a big blow because he's one of the few players that have actually been playing well this season. Up front is the big problem. None of the strikers are playing well. Kevin Folland, since he's come back, has been completely out of sorts. Sharar Aldebecker, who played well in the Champions League, hasn't done anything in the Bundesliga yet. Kevin Behrens, who was called up by Germany, hasn't done anything of note since that hat-trick in the first game of the season, I think it was. So yeah, they're not scoring goal, and at the back, ever since Bunshu's come in,
I knew this was going.
There's just a lack of really? Even mobility.
With Bunshu in there. Mobility.
No, they make a lot of silly mistakes, right. And you know, Union are based on defending well. The foundation is solid defense, hard work.
Who did Bonucci come in and replace, or was he to supplement what they already had?
Yeah, he was supposed to add seniority and
mobility,
consistency. No, but
has he genuinely been bad, or?
No, I don't think it's down to him. There's just many gaps in midfield. I think the bigger loss has been, I mean, Robin Knoche, who's one of the centre backs, he's been out, should come back. And Rani Khedira. Hmm?
Sorry, what? Do go on. No. No, in England, people often talk about players being out with a knock. I just wondered if he's out with a knock.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's Knoche.
Knoche, yeah.
Yeah. Has he got many Knoches in the German media?
Right.
So bad. Terrible. No.
But
yeah. But Rani Khedira.
Yes.
Younger brother of
Sammy.
Sammy.
Yeah. Who was there to see him at the weekend? Who was there to see him at the weekend?
Was he?
Yeah.
How do you know this?
I saw a picture of him I saw some highlights of the game.
James.
And and he was there in a hat. And I went, crikey, surely that's Sammy Khedira, older brother of the fellow who turns out for Union.
Yeah, yeah. He's only just come back.
Okay.
And has been out, and there's been a massive miss because he's the number six. He keeps things neat and tidy. And everyone hopes that Union will go back to their usual self and then start playing well again and scoring. But
isn't their usual self a second division team?
Ooh, punching.
History and tradition. I know what you mean, Raph.
It's their fifth season in the top flight.
Has it really been five seasons?
Yeah.
Woo. Alrighty. Bayer Leverkusen, six straight victories. Latest one coming 2-1 against Wolfsburg.
Yeah, very impressive because Wolfsburg make things really difficult. And they made it very difficult for Leverkusen, who didn't play their usual free-flowing, super sexy football. But they found a way. And I think they found a way because Jeremy Frimpong has been incredible, especially in this game. He scored one, made one. Great combination with Boniface for the first one and Grimaldo for the second. And it was the kind of performance where you say afterwards, to use a cliche, it's the kind of game that a really top team tends to win when they're not actually playing that well. It's a little bit bitty, it's a little bit edgy, but they find a way of winning away to Wolfsburg, which is not an easy place to go to, James. Mm.
I saw that both fullbacks had scored. I thought that's usually a good sign, isn't it? When
Top
side?
Is that a cliche?
Yeah. I mean,
more of a kind of swashbuckling side. They are,
to be fair, they're more wingbacks than fullbacks, but okay. I get your point. Mm. I get your point. I mean, still, it was, by Leverkusen standard, a rather subdued and a laboured win. But, you know, they found a way of winning, which is all that matters, and they're still top.
Excellent. All right. Jules, Ligue 1.
James.
Shall we begin with the Derby of Provence, Nice-Marseille?
Oh, Italian manager's derby as well.
Yeah. We're going to have another one next week as well, aren't we?
Yeah, you will.
Yes.
Indeed.
How did Farioli, this one go?
Mm. Farioli against Gattuso. It was not the best of games, let's be honest. I thought both teams played okay. Nice have the best defense in Europe, not just in France. They've never conceded the first goal ever in a game this season. The only team in the big five leagues to never be behind, never be chasing a game. Although they could have been because Aubameyang missed a big chance at 0-0. And then 30 seconds later, Balerdi gets sent off. And 20 seconds later, Nice scored the winning goal right at the end by Van Gessen. So, well done to Farioli. Gattuso needs a bit more time, I think, but there's nothing
to worry about. Three defeats out of four.
Yes, but he will get there. See.
I liked Gattuso this week. He said in a press conference that he doesn't understand why journalists can't come and watch his team, his coaching staff, put on training.
Yeah, and also I think he was not too happy that there was still a lot of details in L'Equipe newspaper and La Provence newspaper about everything he was doing, although they could not see it because, you know, they were not there. But everything seems very positive, including his hello in the morning to the players.
Okay.
Which, let's put it in a nice way, is very tactile.
Okay.
With a little slap on the face, you know, to say hello, as well as the kisses, all of that. So I think the players really like him. He likes the environment. I think he likes the challenge too, to bring this team back to the top. So they're playing AEK Athens on Thursday, which is a big game for him in Europe, really, especially after the 2-2 draw against
Brighton. To Greece, of course. Yeah. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
Well, he's had quite a career, hasn't he? Next weekend, then, after the AEK game, he's facing another Italian manager in Ligue 1, the similarly challenged Fabio Grosso, who is with Lyon, who this weekend took on bottom of the table. They were in penultimate place. They took on the team below them, Clermont, and managed to get beaten 2-1 at home, so they are now bottom of the table.
They are, indeed. I feel a bit for Grosso because he looks completely lost. Literally, everything he's trying, even bringing Cherki back as a starter, which he clearly doesn't like.
And he doesn't like Ryan Cherki because he's got beef. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's right here.
And took him off for half time anyway in this game.
Is Cherki not playing well under Grosso?
He is clearly not working hard enough for Grosso, I think. This is the idea. And even in his post-match press conference, he said, listen, the players who don't want to be, who don't fancy this fight can leave. You know, I don't need them here.
Right.
Which I understand to a certain point. But this is still a good team with good players that should do much better than what Grosso has been doing for the last, his four games in charge, 3 defeats and 1 draw. So it's poor. And they were so bad in that first half, especially on Sunday night against Clermont. No win this season. They've only scored 3 goals. I think this is, it's really, really bad. And until they really realise how bad it is, I don't think they can find a way back out of it.
Good Lord. Monaco, the other end, still top of the table. A brace from Alexander Golovin.
Golovin.
Handing them a 2-1 win of a Metz. PSG, what are you now? 3 points behind?
Just
yours?
On Monaco quickly, because we mentioned Nice.
2 points behind.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah. Nice have never conceded the first goal in the game. Adi Hütter, on the other hand, and Monaco have won 11 points from losing positions. They have this incredible, I think, mentality. And also, he plays such an attacking style that they will always concede chances and goals. But he spent the second half, for example, on Sunday with 7 forwards.
Seven out of
10 outfield players. And that's what he does. And the players love it because he's so attacking. There's so much running and movement and everything. Right. But they will concede goals all the time, certainly. But they score more than they concede for the moment. So they deserve to be at the top of the table.
Good Lord. 7 forwards, though.
All in all. They have a problem at right back. So Crepin Diatta, who's a winger, really plays right back. And then they only had 1-6. And then everybody else, even Ismaël Jacobs, really is not really a fullback. So yeah, it was a very, very attacking team. And they play great. They create a lot of chances. They score more than the 2 goals that Golovin scored, who were, by the way, amazing goals too.
Very nice. Anything else about Ligue 1, Jules?
Not just PSG winning, PSG, we said Mbappé scored again, even on just the penalty after 4 games without scoring for PSG.
Although he did get some in the international break.
Yeah, with France.
3-2?
3-2, that's right.
And the one in the Netherlands, or in France, against the Netherlands. Amazing goal.
Really nice goal, that. Yeah. So it's good for him before that Milan game.
Absolutely. All right, well, we're going to head off and do midweek European action. Do feel free to join us for that. Then Totally Football Show will return on Thursday with some reaction to the Champions League games. European show will be back next Tuesday, so I hope you have a great week, everyone, in the meantime. To James, to Alvaro, Rafa, Jules, producer Charlie, and you listener, from all of us here, the very Totally goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.